Hey, podcast from Softly, Art of the Dead. This is our little series finale. We've saved the best for last, ladies and gentlemen. We have with us my distinguished guest today, this afternoon, where he is the morning here in the land down under, the Max von Sydow, if you will, of this movie, which is the, I like to call this movie, the Portrait of Dorian Gray meets The Exorcist. Meet Seven. It's a film I absolutely love. I've loved talking to everyone involved, and I'm really happy to be talking to Father Gregory, the Max von Sydow of Art of the Dead, Robert Donovan. Welcome to Podcasting Softly.
Thank you very much, Kent. It's a pleasure to be with you.
That's fantastic. Robert, Rolf and I yesterday were talking about how much you look like Bryan Cranston.
That's true. I do look like him. At least that's what I've been told.
And Rolf wants to do a movie where you play brothers.
Oh, okay. That'd be good.
You think that'd be good? You know.
Oh, man, I'd be up for it.
Or maybe something like Gemini Man 2, and you and Bryan Cranston could play the same character, but one of you is slightly better than the other one. You know, at
but that would be Bryan.
Yeah, I think that would be. I think it would be different. I don't think people would expect that.
Well, I know Bryan personally.
That's fantastic.
We are acquaintances, and he's a wonderful guy.
Oh, well, that's great. As are you, sir. And it's great to have you on the show. So, for the audience who's come in late, who probably aren't as familiar with your work as I am, and some of our other listeners are. Could you give us like the mini bio of Robert Donovan up until Art of the Dead?
I'd be happy to. Started a long time ago before the Earth had properly cooled. I was looking forward to a career in professional baseball.
Really?
And that didn't work out. So I was watching television, and Mel Blanc.
Yep.
The man of a thousand voices, the voice of Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd, among many,
yep.
Barney Rubble with the Flintstones, he had a school for cartoon voices and dialects. And as a player, I had always been pretty good with accents.
Right.
Starting when I was about 6 years old, I saw Sean Connery in a movie called Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Oh, I love that movie.
And I spoke, as a six-year-old, I spoke with an Irish brogue for a week.
Yeah.
Till finally, my mom whapped me upside the head and said, that's not how you talk.
That's fantastic.
Talk like an American.
We should do the song. We should do the song. Oh, she's my dear, my darling one, my smiling and beguiling one. I love the ground she walks upon. My darling Irish girl. Thank you, ladies.
I have long forgotten that.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I answered the ad. They suggested that I do on-camera work.
Right.
Which I did. I wasn't familiar with the term. So they said acting. So I started off with a wonderful teacher, Lorene Tuttle, who was a... one of the first ladies of radio. She was Effie to Howard Duff's Sam Spade character on the radio.
Right.
Unfortunately, I neglected my training as far as acting is concerned.
Yeah.
I worked with Harvey Lembeck, who was Eric von Zipper in the Beach Blanket movies.
Right.
As in improvisational comedy, and I really had a knack for that.
Right.
But I did lack the foundation of scene interpretation, character development, and the foundations of being an actor. So after a number of years of just flailing around, I went back to acting school with Robert F. Lyons and found out how much fun it was and how much the detective work is involved, answering all the questions of who you are and why you're saying what you're saying and where you are and who you're talking to, that rounds out a performance. And then from there, I got into voiceover and studied with a lady named Linda McCarroll, who was also my voiceover agent.
Right.
And I got better, And I think I really came into my own starting with a film that Rolf directed called The Black Room.
Right, yes, yeah.
And then went on to a film with Elliot Feld and his wife Alexandra called Killer Kate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then back with Rolf on The Sunset Society.
Right.
Then we shot Art of the Dead.
Yeah.
And after that, I worked again with the Mahal Brothers on an upcoming film that's probably scheduled for release next October,
yeah.
October 2020, called Attack of the Unknown.
Okay.
And
yeah,
then
cool.
I just finished up in August a film with Robin Christian called Corn.
Okay.
I play the part of a taxidermist.
Right.
Who organizes a taxidermist competition once a year, a secret competition,
right,
where we kill and stuff people.
Right. Wow.
That brings us up to now. I do have to mention my current acting teacher, Kimberly Jensen.
Right.
And been making a lot of strides with her. So I always stress education because I neglected mine.
Right.
Had I not, I might actually have a higher profile at this point.
Right.
And two ex-wives.
There's a question burning in my pocket since you spoke about it. So how's your Irish accent now?
Well, I've been told it's pretty good.
Yeah?
I haven't been to Ireland to order a pint from anywhere, but I understand that it's possible.
That's good.
People say, your name is Donovan. You sound like you're from there.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to be County Cork. That's where my relatives are from.
Oh, okay, very good. No, you did that very well. It wasn't too harsh. It was that nice light melody. The Irish language has a great melody to it, a great musicality, because they are such distinct and musical, magical type people. So it's always lovely to hear that little bit of lilt in the tongue. If
yes.
You know what I mean.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, one of the counties is called Limerick.
Limerick, I think.
Limerick, there we go.
Limerick.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
That's right. A young woman from Ealing had a peculiar feeling. But Robert. My question out of your filmography, I did like a spin of the Wheel of Fortune in your filmography, and I noticed one. So my question from your filmography is, I see that you did an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. Big Chuck Norris fan. So did you meet Chuck Norris, and is he as cool as he is in movies in real life?
Well, I was very impressed with the whole production. They owned the city of Dallas.
Right.
And they had state troopers on site. Everybody was very cooperative.
Right.
And we shot a scene. It was a crossover scene with a movie, or with a show at the time, called, I can't remember, it might have been martial law, but it was the Chinese martial artist Sammo Hung.
Right.
And this was a crossover show between Sammo's show and Walker.
Right.
So an episode, they led into each other. So in the scene, I'm used to one camera on a tripod.
Right.
They had five cameras rolling at the same time.
Wow.
Dollies and cranes. And I was in a fight with Sammo where I throw a thermos at him, which he catches and then throws back at me and hits me in the heart and dispatches me. Meanwhile, Chuck is off about 50 yards away, hanging on the edge of a helicopter as it lands into this big gang fight with these white supremacists and the law authorities. So it was all over. Everybody's dusting the dust off of themselves. I see Chuck and I go over because I wanted to introduce myself to him, but it wasn't Chuck. It was his fight double.
Oh, right.
So I never got to meet Chuck, but I did meet his fight double.
Okay, wow. So he wasn't, they'd obviously done Chuck's stuff, and this was like a different shot or something, so a different angle where you don't need Chuck Norris.
Well, he was there. This guy was doing his stuff as well.
Okay, right.
But
right.
Chuck made this. Yeah, he was doing the hero shots with the helicopter.
Right.
He kicked a few guys and does what he does so well.
Right.
But in the shuffle, I lost track of him and Yep. Ended up with his fight double instead.
Right.
Who was also a very nice guy.
Oh, I imagine. So I've met, in the course of my adventures here on podcasts himself, I've been very privileged to talk to Rene Russo's stunt woman, Arnold Schwarzenegger's former stuntman, James Woods' stuntman. Nicolas Cage's stand-in. Pretty cool. These people are picked for a reason. And it's great. They have this career that's not like it's not a career that's lauded. So I think it's great when like former stunt people are like, I don't know if you're familiar, Stephen Lambert, who is like one of the sort of the stunt legends in Hollywood. He's done everything, right? And he was also...
I know the name.
Yeah, he was also James Woods' stuntman stand-in for his whole career up until, I think, the latter years. But he's just written a great book. It's called From the Streets of Brooklyn to the Halls of Hollywood, I believe, yeah. And if you like your sort of behind the scenes Hollywood, not so much an expose but a life lived in movies, you'll really enjoy that. I personally recommend that to you. So
I'll check it out
next time you're on your Amazon. Chuck her on your Amazon list and give her a look. I mean, you can have a look at a sample, obviously, with Amazon. That's probably one of the good things about it. You can read a little bit and say, oh yeah, that's not my cup of tea or whatever. But if you like your Hollywood stories, this is a guy who's not only a veteran but a legend and a wonderful bloke to talk to. But we are talking about Art of the Dead, and Robert, tell the audience a little bit about Father Gregory. What did you do with Father Gregory? Did you see him as the Max von Sydow of this movie, or did you approach it from a different point of view?
Well, I try not to compare characters to other characters from different films.
Okay, right.
My preparation was, well, I talked with Rolf. He had told me about the part about a year before we shot.
Right.
So I was aware that he wanted me for the role.
Right.
And he did talk about a foggy eye, which was a result of the self-mutilation that Mendel followed through on. And so that was a good start for me as far as his background. I decided that since there was a transformation in the film from the current Father Mendel to the younger Father Mendel, I let my hair grow and grew the beard for the father, the contemporary father. And that way, when they shaved me and cut my hair, I did give at least the impression that it was the younger Mendel who was poking at his eye. My preparation primarily is answering questions about the character. What does he own? Where does he live? Who are his relationships? What's the most important relationship to him? His ideals, his secrets, what he's defending. So all of these things come into play. I answer all those questions in depth. It's not an actual biography, but it gives you a basic of where this person is as far as his point of view is concerned.
Right.
And then that dictates how I react to the scenes and the scenarios that come up in the film.
Right. Very cool.
And it's all up for change. They'll change things at a moment's notice, and that's fine. With that foundation, I can make those transitions without too much trouble.
Right. Sure. You've got the guy, like, you know, I mean, I've spoke to a lot of the other actors that had a similar approach. They used to approach it in a form like a day in his life. Like, they would try and figure out, like, you know, where this guy gets up in the morning, what does he do? And they would try and, as they're learning their lines, they would go through as this character and live a day like that character. You know, where would this character go for lunch? And where would the, you know, if they went to the movies, what movie would this character go and see? That kind of thing. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I know that it's you know, everyone's got their own way, but you really do need to sort of have a feeling, because you're not going on screen as yourself. You're going on as, you know, when the camera rolls, you're not Robert Donovan, you're Father Gregory. So you got to,
right,
you know, and like you said, paramount is to help your reactions, because acting is reacting, and acting is mostly listening, right? If you don't listen to the other actor, you can't respond as though you would respond and not just say your line, that kind of thing. So it's a very good method, I feel. But it's my favorite time of the show. With Father Gregory, I get to play 7 Deadly Questions. All right, 7 Deadly Questions. During the filming of Art of the Dead, Father Gregory, Robert Donovan, did you commit at any time the sin of lust?
I did not.
Okay.
It's not very newsworthy, but I did not.
Okay, that's all right. You didn't lust after another great cup of coffee that they might have made for you, or?
No. I can't say that I did.
No. Okay. Fine.
I did have a passing relationship with a couple of bourbons, however.
Oh, okay. Right. And but you wouldn't really say you would lust after those exact bourbons again.
No.
Right.
All things in moderation.
All right. Okay. Alrighty. Moving on. Gluttony.
Yes. Gluttony is. We're close personal friends.
Okay.
I'm. As an ex-athlete, I was able to eat anything I wanted and not put on any weight. But I think once I turned 30, I had to modify my relationship with gluttony.
Right.
So I do eat sensibly.
Right.
But if the opportunity presents itself, particularly Thanksgiving here in the United States, I'll do 3 helpings of everything and then 3 pieces of pie afterward.
Oh, okay. The very talented, lovely bloke too, I spoke to at the start of the series, was Lucas Hassel, who was Mr. Dylan, the frog, Father Frog, I call him. Father Frog, he said that he loves to watch when they put out the candy in the craft services. And he says you can just see the actors going over there and grabbing handfuls of, like, gummy bears and whatever candy is. I suppose there's all sorts of chips, everything, sort of that sort of thing available.
Yeah, the sweet stuff doesn't last too long.
No, that's what he said. So I said, he said if there's gluttony on this film, then it's that table or that section of the table or whatever it is.
Yeah, that would be craft services.
Right, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, but
anyway, so let's move on to greed.
Uh-huh.
While you were making Art of the Dead, did you feel a bit actorly and go, I'd like another take, I'd like another close-up, Mr. DeMille, anything like that, or not at all?
I usually don't practice greed as a performer. It's when you're at the crap table at one of the casinos, you win a few passes, and you win a few more passes, and suddenly you've got a lot more money than you showed up with, and being greedy, you put it on the line, and it disappears.
Oh, yes, we all done that once or twice.
Then you walk away from the table, smacking yourself with the palm of your hand on the forehead, going, oh, you greedy bastard.
Yeah, exactly, because you're like, oh, geez. You know, because like you say, you always get to that point first where you've got way more money than you walked in with. And the smart man puts that in his pocket and says, I'll go home. I'm ahead.
I've never been accused of being smart.
Okay, neither have I. I'm still improvising my lines. Okay, so sloth, were you... I heard Lucas also said that during the... Because you did a lot of night shooting or whatever, there was a lot of sort of lazy days. So were you sloth-like at any time?
Yes. that's primarily, that's my go-to default setting whenever possible.
Right, right.
So there was, because I was in Las Vegas for a month, but I only shot for 10 days.
Right, right.
So the idea was for me to come back to Los Angeles for a couple weeks, and instead it was more economical and much less stressful, so I just stayed and spent time laying in the sun and went to a Chinese buffet where I overfed myself, then went back to the house, just watched TV, laid on my backside the whole time. Right. Didn't do much of anything.
That sounds right. That's what, Robert, I think what you just said right there is the reason most people want to work in the movie business, hey?
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, and you get paid to do it, too.
You know, there's that. That's very useful.
That's a pretty good life, you know. That's why I think, man, I've talked to kids at schools about movies and stuff like that, and I said, oh, yeah, and then this kid up front, oh, I want to be an actor. And I go, why? Do you like acting? Do you like movies? Do you like the idea of becoming a character and working your way through someone else's story? No, I just want to sit on my ass and get paid a lot of money to do it.
Yeah, there's that impression. Yeah, but it's not like that.
And I was like,
what you get paid for?
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, you go on.
What you get paid for is your preparation, because you'll spend maybe an hour shooting a scene, but you've probably spent 4 to 6 hours just in preparation and rehearsal for yourself.
Sure. I spoke to Danny Tesla yesterday, the artist, Dorian Wilde, and he said... he's a fellow countryman, an Australian over there in America, and and he said that when he first came to Los Angeles, and it was very tough for him because it's very very expensive to live, and so he spent more time working than auditioning and going to, you know, trying to come over there what he came over there to do. So eventually he moved to Las Vegas. Where you made the film, because it's much cheaper living there, I'm led to believe. And and basically he started doing auditions and then got sort of good enough, and he got an agent in LA. And then one day he'd been to like a couple of sort of auditions that didn't go well back to back, and this guy said, you know, he sort of saw him standing there sort of idle and, you know, maybe a little bit pissed off, and he said, you know, that's what you get paid for in Hollywood.
Yeah.
When you're an actor, you get paid to
wait. That's right.
You get paid to wait. You wait around till they need you to do what you do, that you do, you know, obviously good enough to be chosen for the part. But most of the time, you're being paid to wait.
Right? Yeah.
Because essentially they can't... he said it really well. I don't want to paraphrase it. When these come out, when I put these on the website... If you listen to Danny, he says that really well. But you get paid. You're essentially getting paid because a lot of the time you're not really acting. You're waiting to act. You know.
Correct.
So it was very interesting. Very interesting. Very interesting. The first time I'd ever sort of thought about it in that respect. Like you're paid to wait. Really. I mean, it's like when you write a script. For someone, you're being paid for the writing, not for the script, not really for the end result. You're being paid for the hours that you spend, you know, redoing it and rewriting and getting more notes and changing it again and so on and so forth.
That's correct.
But
the trick is to make the most of that time that you have that's idle.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, and
so whether it's polishing your act or keeping yourself healthy or working on a particular script, preparing for a role.
Exactly.
There's plenty of ways to keep yourself busy.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that's what you get paid for.
Yeah, exactly. All righty. So the difficult one we always come to when we do the seven deadly questions is wrath, because, you know, unless someone, you know, stuck a whoopee cushion under your chair and you felt the need to to give them the cream pie in the face for the thank you.
Only in the movies.
Yeah, for the thank you very much. I don't think there was much wrath on the set of Art of the Dead, was there?
No, it was a very congenial, smooth working environment. Usually there's one or two people on a set that people just don't like.
Right.
But there wasn't any of those people on this set. Everybody got along. There was no sense of anger. The only anger that came out was in the course of the shooting the movie, and that's written in the script.
Right, yeah. Yeah. The portrayal of anger, but not genuine heartfelt.
Yeah.
Not genuine heartfelt anger to anyone or any man or beast. We was like,
okay. No.
But
no, we didn't ever share beasts on that show.
No, yeah. Well, there was that creature that you had to wrestle with was quite the magnificent looking beast himself.
Yeah, that was really interesting because the mechanics that made the face move were dependent upon the face, the mask sitting a certain way.
Right.
And it wasn't. And so in order to make it work, besides being in the scene, I had to concentrate on grabbing the back of the mask and pulling it down so that the mechanics would work on it. So that added another dimension to the scene for me, something else for me to do.
Right. Did you imagine when you started to become an actor that you'd be at one point wrestling with a rubber monster, so to speak?
No, I never thought of that, and at the same time, I never thought, as I did in one movie, that I would have a sword fight with two dildos.
Yes, the movie business is...
We couldn't find swords. The dildos were cheap, so we had a duel with dildos.
That's fantastic. That's why I love B-movies, Robert, because it's a different kind of cinema history. There's legitimate cinema history. And then there's the then there's the counterfeit peso cinema history. The B-movies have such a heart and a warmth and a charm that you don't find in massive blockbusters. Massive blockbusters are very well constructed. They hit every note precisely, or it doesn't work. It becomes a bomb, right?
Right.
So the modern blockbuster is essentially like a computer that has been programmed to play the Rack 3 by Rachmaninoff. But the machine plays it perfectly, note for note, but it's vastly different to hear the Rack 3 played by a computer as opposed to hearing it played by someone like David Helfgott or the great pianists of our time. There's no passion in the music, right? Because when you have it's like the difference between being rich and being, you know, poor or lower middle class, right? When you have everything is attainable, and so you can hit those notes with a large film because budget is no, you know, we spare no expense with these movies because we know we're going to make billions of dollars. But when you've got a low budget movie or a B movie, or a straight-to-video movie, or a straight-to-streaming service, or DVD, or whatever. You have to be... The charm comes from the need to be clever with what you've got.
Yes.
You know?
You're very correct in that. It's good of you to point that out.
Yeah, it's good. It pays, and these movies... Like this, the premise of this film, I was saying to Rolf, the first thing I thought about when Art of the Dead ended was basically that I thought, man, this concept is so different and original, and it feels like one of those concepts you're like, geez, I wish I had thought of that. right?
Uh-huh.
And I said, yeah. I said, I got this fear that I could see Hollywood ripping you off, right? Maybe not exactly,
yeah.
maybe not exactly, but, or even if they paid him some money, it would be fantastic, some big Hollywood money to do like a big one. I said, I just think that this premise is so original, such an original sort of Seven Deadly Sins movie, because, I mean, there's been one or two. So I just thought that's the first thing that came to my mind. I thought, geez, I can see someone ripping this off. It's that good, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a very good premise that you've come up with. God knows it happens every day in this town.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, you know, people used to pirate the videotapes that they loved, because why pay for
yeah.
it? You know, the system of piracy, which, you know, which was and has always been frowned upon, because no one wants to see their work hijacked, if you want, without asking, you know, because
yeah.
there's a lot of people that profit, you know, there's we talk about actors and directors and all this, all the above the line talent when we talk about movies, but we don't talk about the grip who's got three kids and, you know, who's a workaday crewman and relies on these movies continuously being made, and he's part of a production team, and they want to do well because they want to keep working, because they've all got families and houses and mortgages and all this sort of stuff. So it's you know, people forget about the nuts and bolts of this business. They see the marquees and the premieres and the you know, the advertising and whatever else, and the interviews on TV or on podcasts or radio or television, but they forget that it's made up of a whole lot of very interesting, very talented, very wonderful people. And that's why you should always watch the credits before you leave the cinema, folks. I know that it's a bunch of words rolling up the screen, but each one of those names is responsible for the movie that you just saw. And
that's right.
That's just...
And the movie couldn't be made without them doing their job.
That's true. And, you know, that's just the way I feel. But, yeah, so the last of the seven deadly questions is pride, Robert. Obviously, you're proud of the film.
Yes. Yeah, I'm definitely proud of the film. It's been getting wonderful reviews. We haven't read anything that was negative about it. Some were somewhat noncommittal, but nobody didn't like the movie.
Yes.
On some level or another. Yes. And that's really very, very gratifying. Because...
Yes.
And proud of the people that were involved, as you mentioned, the cast and the crew.
Yeah.
Everybody did their job, and they did it very well. There was no problems. If a problem did arise, Sonny and Michael Mahal were very good at dealing with it and getting it handled.
Right.
And it was a real team effort, and I'm proud to be part of that team, and I'm proud that the movie turned out as well as it did.
Yes. No, it is really fantastic. It is Art of the Dead. I've been talking with Father Gregory. Robert Donovan, the last question, Father Gregory. You can answer this as Father Gregory or as Robert Donovan. Robert, you pick. Which one of the seven deadly sins do you think is the most deadly?
I would say gluttony.
Right.
Because it's insidious, it's self-serving, it feeds, no pun intended, upon itself.
Right, you're right.
And in invariably leads to a very nasty outcome.
Yeah.
Perhaps a long lingering death.
Yeah.
It's suffering. It's with you for a long time.
Right. Very cool. Okay.
And if I had the opportunity, or if let's say I came up with a terminal illness.
Right.
I would spend the rest of my days eating pizza and chocolate eclairs.
Right, right.
Yeah. So it's something that, especially these days, we have to fight against it, and unfortunately, a lot of people are losing the fight.
That's true. That's true. The irony of the world we live in, Robert, is I think that what always baffled me is they would play an ad for weight loss on TV, and then straight after it was an ad for McDonald's.
Yeah.
It's like the statue of Mao Zedong across the road from the world's largest McDonald's. He's a man who hated the West with a passion. and his statue is directly across the street from the world's largest McDonald's.
Yeah. You can hate America, but just don't hate our fast food.
That's true. Right. Everyone likes a Big Mac. And I've been talking with a Big Mac in the cast, the Max von Sydow of Art of the Dead. He is Father Gregory. He is the wonderful Robert Donovan. Robert, thank you for being on Podcast and Softly. If you wouldn't mind telling our listeners where they can go and see right now, which they should go out and see Art of the Dead.
Well, here in the States, it's available on Amazon. You can buy it on Amazon. You can get it at the Walmart stores. There is a couple of video on demand outlets where you can secure it. I understand that Amazon Prime, you can rent it on Amazon Prime.
Right.
And I forget the name of the distributor, but it is available there in Australia.
It is Umbrella, Umbrella DVD. Everybody, umbrella.com, you can get the DVD of Art of the Dead.
Yeah, thanks for filling that blank in, Kent.
That's right. Yeah. No, I should have mentioned it on the other shows too. Rolf was kind enough to point it out. I'd totally forgotten that it was out with Umbrella here right now. So yeah, Umbrella Entertainment, or go, if you're an Amazon Prime member, to Amazon. You can probably order the DVD there too if you can't get a hold of Umbrella, but you can also stream it live, Amazon Prime. I think Prime,
right.
Prime members get special deals, I think, so I don't know what you'll pay, but you might get a special deal. Prime members sometimes get them for free, but that's cool. Either way, whichever way you get to see Art of the Dead, please get out and see it. And I thank once again my guest, the wonderful Robert Donovan. Sir, with everything you've got going on, with everything you've done, I thank you for your wonderful contribution to cinema. And I thank you, and I hope that everything you've got going on, all the films in the pipeline and everything you're doing, goes well. It's been wonderful to talk to you today, sir.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate your kind words, and I really enjoyed speaking with you.
That's been fantastic. Art of the Dead, ladies and gentlemen, this is our big series wrap-up coming on Podcast and Softly. And, enjoy. Art of the Dead, go and see it. Robert, have Father Gregory, if you could summon him for a moment, have Father Gregory tell the people, the listeners out there, to go and see Art of the Dead.
Don't see Art of the Dead, the wrath of the Lord will be upon thee.
Wonderful. Thanks, Robert. Thanks, everyone. See you all later.